short, fine legs.
Hey, welcome to Short, Fine Legs, South Africa's premium cricket podcast, which is now proudly brought to you by Orcore, Africa's favourite auctioneers. Orcore are the biggest hitters in online and live auctions, featuring the best brands in luxury and budget vehicles and trucks, as well as furniture, appliances and gadgets for your home and office. The Orcore team are also the biggest cricket fans out there, so naturally we're quite big fans of them too. Visit their website, www.orcore.com, or follow them on social media so you're kept up to date with their latest auctions. One of the great things about cricket is that greatness is quantifiable. No one listening to my voice right now ever saw Donald Bradman bat live, and yet it is an irrefutable truth that he is the greatest batter of all time. Now, how do we know this? Well, his average of 99.94 stands as a numerical monument to his prowess with the willow. Runs, wickets, strike rates, averages, economy rates, and dismissals behind the stumps. These are the unfeeling, unthinking statistics that we use to reduce a human being's exploits on the field and how we dilute their life's work to black and white figures on a page. But of course, as you know, this is not the only way to measure greatness. Cricket might be a numbers game, but we love it not because of what it tells us to think, but because it invites us to feel something. Between the irrefutable metrics lies a world of nuance and abstraction, and impossible to quantify emotion. There is no measurement for the way an AB de Villiers blitzkrieg makes you swoon like a Victorian lady, or how terrifying it is to watch a Mitchell Johnson bouncer, even from the boundary's edge. Perhaps this is what greatness really is, not the runs or wickets, but by the way a player makes you feel, how they make you want to pick up a bat or ball, how they invite you to dream and encourage you to mimic their movements. And if that is indeed a measure of greatness, perhaps we should consider the impact a chubby teenager from Grassy Park made us feel in the early years of South Africa's hard-fought democracy. In the first part of this two-part special of Short Fine Legs, we'll be exploring the impact that Paul Regan Adams had on a cricket field and on the culture of a nation still coming to grips with racial unity while the embers of apartheid burned in the background. I'm your host, Daniel Gallen, and even though I had no aspirations of ever bowling wristspin, I believe Paul Adams' action is the one I imitated most when I was a child. And if you're listening to this, I'm confident you know what it looks like, but just in case, here's a refresher. He darts towards the wicket with both hands together, looping his arms as he does so. The momentum of his arms launches his body in the air. It is at this point that he squares his shoulders. His right hand lifts so his elbow faces towards the batter. His left hand holding the ball rises behind his head. His left foot lands and acts as the launch pad for a contortion of limbs once likened to a frog in a blender. His back bends forward, pivoting at the hips. His right hand almost drops to the floor as his left arm whips over his body. Most yoga poses don't require back bends like this. His head dips below his right shoulder as his left arm whirls over the top, delivering the ball in a manner that is both loopy and fizzy.
If you slow his action down, that it looks that at the point of delivery, he's actually not looking at the wicket.
That's Zahir Adams, no relation. He's a cricket journalist with The Independent in South Africa. He's known Paul since he was a child. Both of them played for Blue Bells Cricket Club in Cape Town. Not many journos have the same relationship with the player in the way Adams has with Adams.
You know, he's looking down, he's looking at square leg, basically. You know, at the actual point of delivery. So how does the ball land up on the other side, you know, on a particular spot?
Even Paul himself doesn't know how it happened.
It was just something natural. Picked up a ball, had that action. And obviously, through the years of growing up, I played in the backyard with tennis ball and tried various grips. We don't have access at what kids do have now of the internet. There was no internet. There was no YouTube videos to learn and watch. We were also in isolation, so we weren't getting a lot of international cricket and things like that. So a lot of those things were self-taught. Just my brother and speaking to people around in our club cricket, you know. So I developed also that two-finger grip to turn the ball away, and I would change my grip to get the ball going in. So it was a lot of self-taught things, and sometimes those are you just finding a way of how to be successful and how to be effective in a game of cricket. It just developed over time, and then later on, I really started understanding what I was doing with the ball, and worked on accuracy and all of those things. It's one of uniqueness, and it's just something that I always tell young cricketers is that we're all different. We never copy and paste and become the same type of bowling action. I don't think in world cricket you'll find that sort of things. And mine was very unique. It's all about how do you become effective? How do you become of use for your team to win a game? How do you, you know, and if you have that mindset, if your action's different, but you're spinning the ball, you're landing the ball in the right area and bamboozling batsmen, you can be effective.
We'll get to how effective he turned out to be. But first, let's get into his history.
So when you played at Blue Bells growing up, you'd obviously gone to Plumstead High School as well. We also encouraged him to bowl spin. But a big part of his development was actually he had made the Western Province under 19 B side that year, and for some reason at that time the Coke selectors believed that a traditional off spinner, you know, with a classic action would take more wickets.
South African cricket, with its bouncing seam index, is a land filled with fast bowlers and seam bowlers and swing bowlers. Tall men who run up and hit the deck hard. Occasionally, a spinner is invited to the party, but there are rules. You need to be able to hold up an end, to conserve run rates and the energy levels of the snarling quicks. Adams was an outlier among outliers.
But Kogi, as he got called later, he actually made the SS School's B-side. And again, was purely, he took wickets at the Coke Week, but the going around was the noise around him was, how can we pick somebody with an action like that for in the SA school side? You know, that was the method of, what was it, the mindset at the time, you know, that it was long before T20 cricket and all these innovations. It was quite conservative back then.
Not only did his bowling style single him out, he was a kid in a man's world. He was playing first team club cricket at 14 and would be representing his province and country before his 19th birthday. This guy couldn't have stood out more if he tried. Then, of course, there was the colour of his skin. Paul Adams is what the South African government still classifies as a coloured person. He is neither black, African, or white Caucasian, but neither is he a mixed race. Just 2 years before his first-class debut with Western Province in 1995, the colour of his skin meant he was regarded as a second-class citizen in his own country. But with the ball in his hand, he was otherworldly, bamboozling batters no matter what their melanin count was. And just 3 weeks later, in December 95, in only his sixth first-class match, he got the chance to twirl a few with the touring English and Kimberley with the South African A-side. Lawrence Klusener and Jacques Cullis also played in that match, but it would be Adams who stole the show, picking up 4 for 65 in the first innings and 5 for 116 in the second. Among his victims in that six-wicket win were some of England's biggest names, including nabbing both Alex Stewart and Graham Thorpe in both digs. Overnight, he became a national sensation. His action, his wicket-taking ability, the colour of his skin, it was a dream concoction for a country desperate for feel-good narratives. Months earlier, the Springboks had won the Rugby World Cup with Chester Williams on the wing. Now cricket had its own darling to prove it was on the path towards racial unity. As Zahir says,
South Africa latched onto him as that poster boy that they so desperately yearned for.
That buzz grew to a roar after South Africa drew the first three tests, and after England captain Mike Atherton hit an unbeaten 185 in the second at the Wanderers, yes, that innings, now famous for his tussle with Alan Donald, Paul Adams's name was all anyone could talk about.
He'd literally gone from playing club cricket to playing for South Africa A in about 3 weeks. He played a club cricket game, province B game, took six wickets against Northerns at Super Sport Park, and the next week he was playing for SAA in Kimberley. and bamboozling the likes of Graham Thorpe. So it was a whirlwind, adventure. And that's what it was. It was an adventure. It was, when I speak to him, I still get goosebumps when I speak about it. And like right now, and when you speak to him, he looks back and he'll always tell you that he can't actually remember what happened. It was just so fast. And there was this huge clamor for him to play in the test side. And remember, there were no targets in those days. There was no quotas. There was no, specific numbers that South Africa had to play. Yes, there was the desire to have this, this poster boy and to show the world that South Africa has changed. But it was based on pure talent and ability and the amount of wickets that he was taking in. And there were literally radio stations and newspaper polls calling for him to be handed a debut after a month of professional cricket. I mean, that's unheard of in any sport. So that was just the drama and the excitement around Paul. And it was a lot. It was definitely a lot for a young guy that from Grassy Park, went to Grassy Park High, then went to Plumstead High School and to take in at the time. So it was an amazing experience for everybody involved.
Just put yourself in Paul's shoes for a minute. You're a child, a teenager, a wet behind the ears, barely out of high school kid, now fielding questions about your identity and what your possible selection would mean for South Africa, not just the cricket team, for South Africa. Surely he was terrified.
Definitely. That was a one-word answer, man. Yes, no, thank you. It was very daunting. I was never experienced things like that before in my life. For me, it was really trial and error and learning as we went along with media and having people around you just to protect and understand who I am and that. And later on, I just sort of managed it.
The fourth test was in Port Elizabeth. Traditionally a slower wicket, spinners have always played an important role on the East Coast. In Johannesburg, conservative finger spinner Clive Eckstein bowled 52 overs in the second innings without a wicket. The next test in Durban was a washout, but the all-pace attack was never meant to last beyond that soggy encounter. The stars aligned. Paul Adams was selected to be the youngest ever Protea at just 18 years old.
Yeah, there was a lot of media. Back then, newspapers and pictures of me almost every day in the newspaper, putting pressure. Every game that I played for Western Province, I was taking wickets. And all of a sudden, I was probably the right place at the right time. Forced my hand and myself and Nicky Boyer got picked for the test match out in Port Elizabeth for the Boxing Day the test match. Not knowing still am I going to get picked or am I just being brought into the squad for experience, and all of a sudden, the night before, announced you're playing, you're making your debut for South Africa at 18, the youngest to do that. What a great experience and honor to have represented the country at that tender age and just wanting to go out there and do my best.
Captain Hansi Cronje broke the news to Paul, who ran to the phone in his hotel room.
Immediately got on the phone with my parents. My parents were fortunate enough to get a correspondent. They came down to the Port Elizabeth test match and people helped out in putting them up in a hotel and make sure that they were there to support and watch. And actually a lot of friends and people from St. Augustine Cricket Club and everyone came down towards Port Elizabeth to support that. It was exciting. It was just great memories for everyone to have.
Even with Adams collecting three wickets, including Atherton and Thorpe, yet again, in the first innings, South Africa could still not procure 20 scalps for victory. And despite the result, it was an experience that Paul will always savour. It was not just the fact that he was fulfilling his life's ambition. He now represented a new era of South African sport, which was not lost on him, even if that realization happened later in his career.
At that time, I was just focused on cricket. As a young cricketer, knowing that Unity's happened, we were open play international cricket again, and I'm one of the fortunate ones to pave that way. It's really for another next generation, and it gave hope and it gave a lot of inspiration to people, and that's where the conversations were going with a lot of older people within my space, within my family, within our group, and they would just encourage me to do my best. As I said earlier, as I look back later on, and you realize the impact you made, and I'll talk further on down the line is when former President Mr. Nelson Mandela would give me a call, and I'd go have tea or have lunch at his house up in Bishop's Court or at Tainas here in Cape Town, and he'll just talk about what sort of impact sport does make within our communities, and how people what I was doing could inspire the youth and people within the country, and make sure you're always making a positive impact on people, and not knowing that you could inspire quite a few people within the nation.
Naturally, this came with challenges.
No, it was an absolute culture shock for Paul. We'd grown up in Blue Bowls, where I was telling you just a couple of years before, his dad was taking 11 kids in a car and trying to push them all into, get them all to a game. And then the next minute he's staying in these fancy hotels, flying all over around the country and playing in front of at Newlands. I mean, a place where we as colored people were never allowed to go, to attend for so many years, and suddenly you're Paul Adams from Gosford Park. I remember one journalist calling at a blue collar suburb where people share rooms and mothers wash dishes, wash clothing by hand, something ridiculous like that. That's how he was referred to when he started out, but he was just a kid that wanted to play cricket, that loved the game. He loved it. That was the one thing about Paul. He was very, very shy. You couldn't hardly get words out of him, and suddenly all these cameras were on him, and even one of the sad things that he will even admit to is that he was so shy at the time that he actually drifted away from his community at the beginning, because he just didn't know what was the right thing to say, who to speak to, how would it be perceived, so he just kind of kept himself in those early years, and it was a tough period watching him to see this kid, because that's what he was. He was a hero to all of us growing up. A guy from where we all played and to play for South Africa. We wished him unbelievably well. Every single game, whether it was in Paul, in Poland, we'd drive through there to watch it, whether it was on television, every single match. And when Paul came on, there was a sense of excitement, that obviously the action was part of the lure, but just the fact that so many people wished him well, and that was a hell of a lot of pressure for a young man like that.
So Paul let the ball do the talking. On beaches and streets, in parks and private gardens, children twisted their bodies in imitation of a young man who had become an icon. And rather than wilt under that pressure, Adam sought to use it, to harness the love of his people, not just coloured people from the Cape, but all South Africans, who believed in Mandela's ethos that sport had the power to change the world.
It's a driver within, I think, a lot of elite sportsmen. It's one of the big drivers for them. I've had conversations with Brayton Pulser, Makai, and all of them, and it's a big driver within us as the young South Africans that were emerging out of coming out of the sport, and it was so important for players like us to perform and get out there.
For 5 years, Paul was a mainstay in the Proteas side, but the quirky outlier was always going to face adversity in some form or another. Opposing batters soon figured him out, and his action no longer carried the mystique it once did. Teammates and fans looked at Australia's Shane Warne and wondered why Adams wasn't as effective, And then there was the fall of Hansi Kriniar and the new era under Graham Smith on the horizon. We'll get into all of that and a certain infamous incident that occurred in the Caribbean on the next show of Short Fine Legs.
Shout for LBW. Oh, he's got him. That's well run, or is it? Oh, well fielded. That's out. That's got to be out. That's beautifully done.
What a great...